Something very interesting happened. So when I was running and I really wanted to stop, and this mind of mine was screaming, stop, do whatever, stop. And I just thought to myself, you know what? Just push yourself to the next corner. Let's just go one more block. So that voice, which kept saying no, 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 I was very aware of saying, I'm just going to observe it. I'm not going to ignore it. I'm not going to pretend that it's not there. In fact, I'm going to thank it. And you know, this is all happening in my mind while I'm running. So it's acknowledging the thank you. And it sounds quite weird that you would acknowledge this voice that's telling you to stop. But we have that voice, and the voice exists, and the voice comes up. It's there narrating throughout the day.
Welcome to the Reinvent Health Podcast. We are all motivated by meaning, which is why the Reinvent Podcast aims to bring you a wide range of information, focusing on all aspects of physical, mental, and spiritual well-being, so that you can make the changes towards a more meaningful, healthier, and happier life. And now, your host, Nikki Robertson.
In March 2020, I interviewed Nikki Sibirini about her commitment to run the Jerusalem Marathon, having literally hated running her entire life. Inevitably, the marathon was cancelled due to COVID, but not one to back down from a challenge, Nikki persevered, and in true mind freedom fighter style, reframed running as a mindfulness exercise. It is for this reason, whether we're conscious of it or not, that exercise is so useful as part of your stress management strategy. She also goes into the practice of observing your thoughts rather than getting sucked into the vortex of anxiety and stress. Nikki Sibirini is a well-known talk show host on Chai FM and mindfulness facilitator, and you can find out about getting in touch with Nikki on the show notes page. I hope you enjoy this chat as much as we did. When we last spoke, you were about to go to Jerusalem and do this marathon. And that was just the most incredible thing. And then the world changed, as we know, and we got miserable. I think we spoke after that. So what's happened in the year? I mean, I read your article that you posted online. I was a bit blown away. It was quite amazing to read that. But what you said is so true.
It's true.
It's running is a mind game. And I think that's why it's easier for adults to run. And that's why it's so hard as kids. There are gifted children who can just run long distance, but it's very, very rare that you find kids who really want to go out for a 10K run. They usually fight that. It is a mind game. So let's chat firstly. How is your running going? That's what I really want to know.
Nix, it's going so well. Listen, you're talking to someone who literally hated running. Like, I would rather do anything other than go for a run. So the fact that I carried on, even when we were in lockdown, I was circling my property, the property, going round and round. You know, I just felt like I accessed something that I didn't want to lose. It was magical. You really, when you said turn it into a mindfulness exercise, and I did, and it actually took my mindfulness practice to another level, funnily enough. But the running I'm loving. So it's twice a week. I don't do more than twice a week. I hit 4.6 Ks. The other day I did 5.6 Ks. And, you know, I'm not trying to push myself too hard, but I love what happens while I'm running.
And as you said, you hated running. I hated running my whole life. I couldn't actually understand why anyone would want to. What have you got to run away from? It hurts. You can't breathe. You sweat. I would do anything to not run. And then suddenly something clicks and you go, oh, it's just amazing. But it is a mind shift. So let's chat about that. What was happening for you?
Yeah, it is a mind shift. And I'll tell you something very interesting, because I was working with a client and we were working on anxiety and we were working on claustrophobia and we were working on this voice that just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And I know, because I suffered from panic attacks years ago, terribly. It also started off as this claustrophobic thing. And that voice that you know you shouldn't really listen to, you know that it doesn't make sense, you know that what it's saying is not making sense, but it just gets louder and bigger. And so I call it the two minds. It's like the thinking mind, and then it is the observing or the infinite mind. And it's almost as if what would happen to me is that mind, the observing mind, would shrink, and this thinking mind with these crazy thoughts would get bigger and bigger and bigger. So, but like part of my process, Nick, is really working on being the observer and watching. And not getting sucked in. Something very interesting happened. So when I was running and I really wanted to stop, and this mind of mine was screaming, stop, do whatever, stop. And I just thought to myself, you know what? Just push yourself to the next corner. Let's just go one more block. So that voice, which kept saying, no, 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 I was very aware of saying, I'm just going to observe it. I'm not going to ignore it. I'm not going to pretend that it's not there. In fact, I'm going to thank it. And you know, this is all happening in my mind while I'm running. So it's acknowledging the thank you. And it sounds quite weird that you would acknowledge this voice that's telling you to stop. But we have that voice, and the voice exists, and the voice comes up. It's there narrating throughout the day. And the trying to ignore it is like trying to push a soccer ball, a plastic soccer ball, under the water. Hmm. It's not possible, right? You push it under and it's going to pop up. And so what with that voice, I almost acknowledge, because you know, Nick, that brain of ours is just trying to keep us safe and not wanting to endanger us. And this brain is saying, you're tired, stop. And we're human. And we all experience it. And there's nothing wrong with us. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's doing what it should be doing. So I'm not saying shut up. I'm not saying you don't exist. I'm saying thank you.
Yeah.
You know, thank you for looking after me. Thank you. And I'm going to carry on running. Mm. So that was kind of like the observer mind that noticed the thinking mind, the craziness. It was creating the stories and scenarios. The thank you, I so acknowledge that you're looking after me, and I'm going to continue. And it was very, very powerful, very. And while I was running, I thought, you know, I can understand why people use exercise, and very specifically running, because it can be so measured when dealing with something like anxiety, because you're literally training your brain, not just physically. If you use it properly, you're training your brain. So very long-winded, but that's what it was for me, and that's what it is for me.
Yes, and not only are you training your brain and having a conversation with the part that is saying, why are you doing this to me? You're also creating chemistry in your brain that is actually diffusing the anxiety. So when we are anxious, we're making you're in the parasympathetic nervous system state, you're making all these chemicals that make you painful. So you experience a sore back, you experience a closed throat, a headache. Every part of you really hurts. And that's the part of you that's saying, stop doing this to me. But when you go, oh, that's interesting. I'm going to breathe in. And I used to do this. I used to breathe into the part that was hurting. Take a deep breath and visualize the air going into that part that was tense. And instead of fighting the run, is to consciously concentrate on relaxing the part that was tensing. So you put your mind back into your body, and then the voice goes, well, that didn't work. Let's try another tactic. And you to see how you can actually play with this conversation in your head. So what you do is you start dissolving that chemistry and creating oxytocin, dopamine, serotonin, which makes you feel like you can continue. And those are the happy neurochemicals that we all look for. And like you said, that's the runner's high. That's what you realize, how people go from being completely inactive to loving it, and how it dissolves anxiety, how it gets rid of depression. It's nature's way. It's nature's Prozac, frankly, is movement. And specifically running. I'm not sure. I can't really reference the cyclist, because I personally don't enjoy bicycles, and that's just me. But I suppose that, you know, whether you are cycling or running, you're getting that endorphin boost, and you're overcoming the part of your brain that's suppressing you.
It's a very conscious process. I mean, just what you've described as well, it's a very conscious process. And we are so distracted in life. We're so busy doing that we never pause and become mindful, or, you know, completely present and not sucked into a thought or what is happening. So it really is a very conscious exercise of the pulling yourself back to the present moment. And the incredible, so you talk about the chemistry that's happening in the body, and there's rewiring happening in the brain. So with the mindfulness, yeah, and they're looking at the results of 6 to 8 weeks of mindfulness practice where you're doing just that. The voice appears. You get lost in the thought. And that's okay. And I just want to always stress it. That's okay. It's always with kindness. There's nothing wrong. It's how our brain works. It's fine. But it's the acknowledging that you're lost in the thought and bringing yourself back. Just like with that running, as you were saying, you turn towards the pain. You don't move away from it. You're turning towards it. You're in it, and you're rewiring the brain. It's a fabulous thing. I can't believe I'm actually sitting here talking to you about the benefits of running, but I am, Nix. And it's been an extraordinary journey, a physical one, and very much a mental one. Very much so.
And I think it really is a metaphor for life, because we tend to avoid the pain in everything, whether it's a conflict in a relationship or we don't want to deal with somebody at work. We avoid the pain. We avoid the discomfort. And the only way to solve something is to go through it. And, yeah, you know, you just summed it up so well, is that when we face and turn towards the discomfort and work into the discomfort, we can, you know, ascend through it. And that is... it's true for everything. So it's interesting how these things come up in life, and I don't know if it's to say to teach you lessons, but to give you examples of how you can, if you're aware, if you can see the bigger picture, stand back and observe, like you said, you know, where's the lesson here? I just love that.
I do too. And also, you know, with pain, a big problem with pain is the anticipation of the pain and the avoidance of the pain. And that if you actually, as we were just saying, turn towards the pain, and if you are very present with that pain, you notice that pain is not static. It's moving all the time. It's changing sensationally. It's a pricking, burning, pulling, pounding, throbbing. And sometimes it's tiny, sometimes it's wobbly, sometimes it's sharp, sometimes, you know, that's the only way I can describe it. But by really being with the pain, it's just a fascinating thing to witness the changing of it. And as you notice the changing can expand and contract, then you realize that pain is not constant, that it comes and it goes. Mm-hmm. And when you can be with that, like you've got this, oh, I would get these terrible cramps, right? And I'd be, oh my, what am I going to do? This terrible cramp. Be with the pain, just like you were describing, be with the pain. And just amazingly, it would dissolve and then it would move you. And again, it's with compassion and kindness. It sounds so weird to say it. It's like, okay, you're there. I'm here. I feel it. It really sounds weird, but.
Yes, it does sound weird.
Exercises for life. They really are.
It just makes me think of your mindfulness coaching. And this is exactly when we talk mindfulness to people, whether it's mindful eating and being present with what you're doing. It's so interesting how we get these opportunities, no matter what we're doing, to be present within ourselves. And then in your blog post that you wrote, you speak of the default mode network, which is exactly the opposite of what we call flow state. Because when you're in a flow, you're super focused on the task. You're so focused on the task that time and space cease to exist. So that is hyper mindfulness when you're in that state of flow. So let's chat about what the default mode network is and why it's there.
Well, interesting, because the default mode network, they really just became aware of this, the fact that different parts of the brain would light up when you weren't focused from these fMRI scans. And so when we are focused, just that, our brain is in a certain mode, but when we're not, these parts of the brain light up and they are associated with past thinking, future thinking. So it's like ruminating, it's projecting into the future, it's self-conscious thinking, it's judgmental thinking, it's a lot of me, I thinking. And so when this part of the brain is lit up, what they have also found is that it creates more anxiety, more stress, we are not as happy when we're lost in. So it's lost in thought. When the default mode network is activated, another word is you're lost in thought. And, you know, studies that came out of Harvard showed that 47% of the day we are lost in thought. That's nearly half of our day. We're present, but we're not present. We're here physically, but we're elsewhere. And what they also found with this research, very interestingly, is they kind of got people to check in before they got lost in thought. So they assessed their mood, their level of happiness, and then they checked in when they came back. And what they found is people who returned from mind wandering or from being lost in thought were less happy, because the default is to activate the parts of the brain, as I said, the self-conscious thinking, the judgmental thinking, the planning, et cetera, et cetera. So the mindfulness trains the brain to quieten the default mode network. It almost turns the light down. What's lighting up, it's turning it down. And when you do it enough times, you start to rewire the brain. So we've got this neuroplasticity. This modern neuroscience tells us that our brain is not like once it's formed in the formative years, that's how we are and we're limited. Not at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so before it was kind of like, imagine the brain was like dough and you put it in the oven and that was it. It was set for life. And it's not. It's malleable. And so if you continue to notice your lost in thought and bring yourself back, then you start to rewire the brain. Cortical thickening shows that you can then help with your emotional regulation and your focus and your learning. And that's because you've rewired. So you can change the default mode network. And the more you do it, the easier it is to get into that flow state that you were talking about.
Yeah, I find it quite disturbing. It's called a default. It's almost like we're kind of wired to go back to that. Yeah. But then the brain does have a negativity bias. And that is, again, because it's protection. So it's always worst case scenario thinking, because that's what has kept us safe. And our brains are no different now to how they were when we were, you know, running around in caves with loincloths. It's the same brain. It's just got, you know, a bit more technology and that kind of thing. We've evolved, but we haven't caught up really. So we are biased towards negativity. And, you know, I see people all the time just falling into those states, and I'll never do this, and this one doesn't like me, and I'll never be able to achieve that. And where does this come from? Do you think that perhaps our default mode network is nurture or nature or a combination of both?
I would say it's a combination of both. So the default is to activate the parts of the brain that bring about that type of thinking. Now, when we look at the content of that type of thinking, that's going to be the nurture, right? So the nature, those parts of the brain light up. The nurture is a deep sense, your deep-rooted beliefs, your foundational beliefs, which are created from 0 to the age of 7. So all of these things that happen in your life are stored. You have stories about them, because when we're younger, we don't have an emotionally mature brain. We don't know why things are happening. We think it's all about us. And so I'm not even talking about extreme trauma. It could be any situation. It's the way we process it. It's when we're little, we're finding meaning. That's what our brain's doing. We're trying to find meaning. We're interpreting it. Why is it happening? Why is it happening to me? And very often, and I'm thinking, most people listening to this podcast will be able to relate to this, is it goes to the I am not good enough. There's something wrong with me. I cannot be loved. So I would say that is the nurture. And then that underpins everything. So those are part of the subconscious thoughts that come up. So 93% of what we're doing, the thoughts that come up when we're lost in thought. So just think about that. That's the default mode. Right. 47% of the day we're there. And then 93% of those thoughts that are activated are coming from the deep-seated beliefs. And so it's almost like a double-edged sword. So where to from there? What do you do? You do it together. So you do the mindfulness practice. So you're training your brain or rewiring not to be lost in thought as much, and going to those beliefs. Identify, what am I, core beliefs? What's bubbling up for me?
A trick I've learned in the last few months is when these thoughts come up, or you're in the traffic and you are going off at a taxi or somebody else, is I've started asking myself, whose voice is this? Because it doesn't sound like my voice. This is not my voice. And on one end, it breaks the train of thought to just pull back and to ask yourself a question, stops you rolling down the hill with these thoughts. But to also say, but whose thought is this? Is this something I was conditioned to think in childhood? Is it my dad's voice? Is it my mom's voice? Is it my brother's voice? Who's doing the talking here? And you can end up having a really good laugh at yourself, because actually a lot of the time that negativity, that voice going on at you in your head, isn't even you. You go, oh, no, this is definitely my mom. This is what she used to say to herself. This is what she used to say to us. I'm just perpetuating the myth here. And I find that to be such a useful way to break the soundtrack, because the soundtrack affects your health. It affects your way you interact with other people. It affects everything. But it's controllable. We've all got this gift that we can press pause and ask other questions. And I think that should be taught in school. I think this is something we need to be more aware of.
We do need to. And what you've just spoken about is so powerful, to be able to separate from your thoughts. Because you see, Nikki, we think that we are our thoughts, and we believe that our thoughts are true. And we think our thoughts. So that's quite a lot that I've just thrown in there. So we don't think our thoughts. If you think about the default mode network, and if you just see this mind, this thinking mind, as a mind that secretes thoughts, just like you're breathing, you're being breathed, we are being thought. And that's what's happening. And so that's why I love to divide the thinking mind into the one mind, and then you've got the observing mind. And if you think of metacognition, it's the knowing that you're thinking. It's the awareness of thinking. Again, Homo sapiens sapiens, we are the species that thinks, and we know we think. So there is observer, and then there is thinker. So when you're told enough times, there's something wrong with you, and it started off, you did something, maybe a caregiver was frustrated, oh, why did you do it? There's something wrong with you. And there you have that belief, and it creates this construct within which you operate, and you believe that, and you hear it enough times, it is a belief. It's real. And why as well? Because thoughts bring about feelings. So when you have the thought, there's something wrong with me, oh, the body will support it. You talk about a chemical reaction. You feel it in your body, and it brings about all the emotions, and you become the thought. But when you do exactly as you mentioned, when you all of a sudden pull away, you become the observer. You are the one that is noticing the thinking. Oh, who's that? Is that my mother? Is that my father? Where's that coming from? Oh my goodness. Just like I was talking about when I was running. Thank you. Thank you for that. You're looking after me. Same thing. When you pull away, if you separate from the thought and you start to go, hang on, that's not a truth. That's just a thought. That's just a belief coming up. It's a powerful process, and this cognitive fusion, this idea that I am my thoughts and that I am the thinker of my thoughts, and then I am depressed, or I am anxious, or I am stupid, or I am not lovable. You see where you go. It becomes the identity, and this is who you are in the world. And all it is a thought that's not true. It's just a thought.
Yeah. And it's so profound that actually what we think is true, it's not true. Most of the stuff that we think is true is complete fantasy. And it flies against everything. We like to believe that we're in control, that we know what we're talking about, that we know what people are thinking. We don't know what people are thinking. We haven't got the first clue. And to start letting that go, that's the most incredible freedom, is to realize we know nothing. Unless somebody tells you how they're feeling, you don't know how they're feeling, and it's an assumption. But I mean, what you've said now is pure quantum physics. And what we believe about ourselves and we tell ourselves becomes our physiology, we also put that back into the environment, and the environment reflects that back to you. So you scowl at somebody, they're going to scowl back at you, and you're going to reinforce that belief that the world is an angry place. Or if you smile at somebody, they're not going to be able to help themselves but smile back at you, which will confirm your belief that the world is a happier place. And although we feel like we don't have control of our thoughts, which we don't, we have control over our responses. That's the only thing we can really control, is how we choose to respond to the thought or the next person. But it takes a decision to do that. It takes a degree of pain, I believe. You have to get really deep, dark, and down into that dungeon to start going, I can't do it anyway. I can't do this anymore. I have to find another way to do this.
Yeah. And you know, as you say, you can't control your thoughts. And what the mindfulness practice does as well is it slows you down in the moment to moment to moment to moment. And it kind of creates this gap, the gap between stimulus and response. And the objective is to lean, push into, expand the gap so that you don't just respond, so that you don't just say something that you're going to regret or make a decision or react in a certain way. It kind of expands that gap. So the practice does it. And as I mentioned earlier, with the neuroplasticity, it's happening in the brain anyway. But you also said something else, Nikki. You said that, you know, if you smile at someone and they smile it back, it reaffirms that the world's a wonderful place. And the same goes with if someone scowls. Now, you know, we go back to the brain and we've got this reticular activating system, and it's this little pocket of millions of nerves at the base of the brain, and all the sensory responses come through that area. And it's like a secretary working for a CEO in a very big company. The secretary decides what's important and who should go and meet with the CEO, because he's a very, very busy person. And so the same goes with the RAS. The RAS will give the brain, because there's so much information out there, the RAS will give the brain what the brain tells it is needed, right? So it's, you know, the scenario, you're looking for a red car, all of a sudden you're driving the streets and you see a million red cars.
Yeah.
And it's not a coincidence. It's because your brain is saying, I'm looking for a red car, and the reticular activating system will bring up the red cars. There are just as many blue, white, gray, but that's what the brain does. So going back to those belief systems, because that ideally is what is going to drive the reticular activating system. I am not good enough. Your brain will actively seek out out there in the world all the examples that will support I am not good enough or there is something wrong with me. And your brain will not find all the things where you are good enough or where you are amazing or where you, because that's not the belief system that's driving it. And so it really begins with consciousness. And as you said, we don't know what other people think. We don't know what other people are feeling, yet we base our happiness and our peace of mind on that. So this work is going within. It's not about changing the world. It's not about trying to change other people in our lives. When we change what's happening within us, it does change. Just as we've said, the science, the neuroscience, it all supports it.
Oh,
it's a beautiful journey. Mm. It's a beautiful journey, and it's on us. It's so great to know that we don't have to rely on other people or events to play out in order for us to be okay. It's such an empowering, wonderful thing, because it is an illusion when we think that out there has to improve in order for us to be okay.
Oh, of course. And the only way to change your relationship with another person is to change your response to them. Is literally, it's you. You're responsible for how you interact with them.
Yes. And I would also I would add something else, because the response is very often the default. So underneath the response is, what am I thinking about them? So how I'm thinking, because then once you work out, what am I thinking about them, then the response will change. So so you're going to, with everything, actually, the foundation of everything is, it's not this person, it's what I'm thinking about them. It's not what they said, it's how I'm interpreting what they said. It's not that I've lost my job, it's what I'm attaching to losing my job. It's never what they're saying, what they're doing, it's what I'm thinking about. So the real gem in this work, the real gem, is identifying what am I thinking and believing and questioning it. And when you question it and that thought all of a sudden loses its charge, then you no longer see that person through that lens, you know, because the lens has disappeared. So then your response automatically changes.
Yes, the meaning we make. Yeah, it's fascinating. I love it. And, you know, there's so many people out there who are really battling and who feel that they have no choices. So, and there's going to be people listening to the show who go, I'm feeling completely lost. I don't know where to turn. I don't know what to do next. So where do we start when we're in that state of complete and utter devastation is one word, but not knowing what to do next because we can't continue to live life the way we've been living it. How do we start?
You know, that's a huge question, Nix. It's really a huge question because of all the circumstances that support those beliefs. And we've gone into what are your foundational beliefs that are driving you to respond to life and respond to things that are happening in your world that bring about this, I can't go on, I don't know what to do, I'm exhausted, or whatever it is that comes up for you. So there are a few things that you have to do. We've spoken about the one thing, you know, daily habits, bringing in daily habits, as in, I use this word cautious mastery, being able to master your mind, being able to be aware when you're lost in thought, to acknowledge that you're lost in thought, to acknowledge the feeling that's come from being lost in thought and notice it's just a thought and let it go, drift on and do what thoughts do and bring yourself back to the present moment. So like a mindfulness practice, a gratitude practice, before you climb into bed at night, to take a journal and really actively seek the good things that have happened. Because it is the law of polarity within every situation. You've got the two sides. That is how it is. It's not woo-woo. That is how it is. In every negative, there's a positive and vice versa. So you can start to train yourself to look for the positive. It's very, you spoke about the negativity bias. It's very easy to think about all the things that have gone wrong. So how do you actively seek out the good things? And even if you just have to sit quietly for a moment and notice that you're breathing. You just have to think about the people who are struggling through COVID, who are right now on a ventilator. That in itself can bring about an incredible feeling of gratitude.
Absolutely.
You talk about chemical release. When you have gratitude, you have dopamine, you have serotonin. Yeah. Physiologically, you feel better. Mm-hmm. And I use breathing exercises as well. So it's slowing down the breathing. You spoke about the sympathetic nervous system. So when you breathe in the slowly inhale to the count of five, hold to the count of three, slowly exhale to the count of seven. If you can do that for a few minutes, maybe three times a day, you're pushing that, switching off the sympathetic nervous system, you're switching on the parasympathetic nervous system. A different part of the brain is working, you're calmer, it's the rest and digest. And you're going to be less emotional and less reactive. So those are very practical things you can work on. Mm. The next thing you're going to work on is in the moment, how do I start shifting my mindset? How do I try and do a perspective shift? How do I do a reframe? Again, it's you working on yourself, just like you would go to gym and you have, this is what I do for core. This is what I do for biceps. It's the same thing. And then I believe very strongly in going to people, Nix, and going to someone who can support you and help you go within and unpick areas that are you know, hounding you, that come up. Those are the circulating thoughts that are keeping you in that stuck state of, I don't know what to do and I can't move. There are trained people to help you do it. Don't navigate your mind through your lens because you're only going to go round and round and round in circles. So there's so many options. There really are many options. And I would encourage people to get the support and get the right people. Because when you identify what thoughts are there, when you can go to those core beliefs that you have and you can slowly start to dissolve them, then you're operating from a clear mind. And then the will changes. And it's work, Nix. It doesn't just happen.
It's work.
It is work.
And speaking of work, you've mentioned the work by Byron Katie, which is free for anybody to go onto her website and download her tools if you can't afford to go to a therapist. And that is the most exquisite set of tools to start unpacking your thought processes and to question whether or not your thoughts are even true. Mm. I think you've mentioned her in one of your blogs as well.
Yes. I came across Byron Katie years ago when I actually interviewed her on a radio show. I'd never heard of her before. And so I did a whole lot of investigations. And I thought, you know, what I loved about it is that I've loved this space and I've loved this area of going into self, working on self, the mind, the power of the thoughts, et cetera, et cetera. But what I really loved about this was that she gave you a how on what to do with those thoughts. Though when you're stuck in the loop of that kind of thinking, and the how is very simple. She just says, ask four questions. And but you know, you have to identify what it is that you're thinking. And so she starts off by saying, judge your neighbor. Before you work on yourself, work on the mother or the father who put down the phone on you and you're having an argument with, or the friend who disappointed you. So you think of a very particular situation. You go back there now and you fill in a judge your neighbor worksheet and you hold each statement up to four questions. And the four questions, Nikki, are, is it true? Can you really know it's true? And those first two questions, it's just a yes or no. The third question is, what happens to you when you believe that thought? And you start to feel into your body, oh, I feel this, and the emotional response. And then you really sit quietly and you become aware of past images that come up and future images, because nothing you experience now is what you're actually experiencing now. And I'll say that again, nothing that you're experiencing now is what you're actually experiencing now. You are experiencing your history. And anything from the past is imprinted on now, which is impacting what is happening with you and your friend or your parent or your colleague or your boss or whatever. And it's part of projecting into the future. And then the fourth and final question is, who would you be without this thought? And psychologists have really looked at it. And when you do it, all of a sudden, when your brain is aware that there is an alternative, that this is not the sticky thought that is true, something shifts within your brain and the thought disappears.
Yes.
So it's a very powerful process.
Yes.
It's a fabulous process.
It's magic. It's absolute magic. But yes, to find professionals who can help you, it's really important, because a lot of us, a lot of people battling with whatever they're battling with really feel alone, and they feel they're the only ones. And to talk it out with somebody who has empathy and can, you know, help you to understand that you're not alone, a lot of people are feeling this way, in and of itself is a good start. But yeah, I mean, I'll put Byron Katie's link into the show notes together with your blog post as well. Because I know that a lot of people right now are battling. The mental health statistics are incredibly high. People with being admitted for depression and suicidal thoughts and things like that. And anxiety at the moment, it's probably worse than it's ever been. Psychologists, psychiatrists that I've been speaking to have been as overworked as the doctors in the ICU wards. So we're sitting with a very critical situation at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And COVID is really bringing it out. So if we had vulnerabilities in certain areas, it's going to come out. For some people, they have found an inner strength that they never realized they had. Mm. And you know, Nikki, what it really does, it's kind of like the salt on the wound when it comes to COVID, is it's highlighting the what if in our world. And as I said, we've discussed this brain of ours, which is really fantastic, but the purpose is to keep us safe, to get our genes into the next generation. And so this brain is predicting and planning all the time. And now we've got this global pandemic and no one knows what the future is going to bring. No one knows if the vaccine is actually going to work. No one knows if we're going to return to life. And on top of that, the personal losses that we've had, whether we've lost people we love, whether we've lost financial stability, the jobs, the whatever it is, the tremendous loss and not knowing when it's going to come to an end. So we're in this constant, our brain is in overdrive.
Yeah.
Again, the sympathetic nervous system, we are in fight or flight. It's that's what it has it's kind of stimulated that sympathetic nervous system. And unless we're really careful, we're going to be operating from that place all the time, because we've got the brain that's projecting into the future. The what if, the what if, the what if, the what if. So we're overstimulated with these stress hormones and we're pretty exhausted. So that exercise that I spoke about a little bit earlier, the breathing, the slow inhale to the count of five, the holding to a count of three, the slow exhale to the count of seven. And as you exhale it, you kind of push your belly button against your spine. So you really get the air out and you're trying to stimulate that vagus nerve. If you do that throughout the day, you're going to be helping your chemicals. You're going to be rather producing the good, relaxing chemicals rather than the fight or flight ones. So that's what COVID's done. We're all in this heightened state. And more now than ever before, we have to manage ourselves. Mm. Really, we do.
Absolutely. So Tim Noakes mentioned in a book, and I think he's referenced it in a couple of books, was the central governor theory, which is a part of our brain that needs something to pin onto so we can see an end goal. So if you know that you are running 10Ks, your brain does whatever it needs to do to your physiology to gear you up to do 10Ks. But if it's 11Ks and your brain thinks it's 10, that last K will be impossible for you to do, because it's almost calibrated you to just 10Ks and not a step more. So when you said earlier, I'm just going to go around this block, that's making an agreement with the central governor in your brain to go, okay, fine.
I love it.
I can do the block, but no more than the block. But that's what we're lacking in COVID, is our central governor, which says we have a holiday to look forward to in April. I can plan my business projections up until the end of the year. That's gone. The central governor that keeps us able to persevere through anything has been taken away from us in the last 12 months. And I firmly believe that is the reason we're seeing so much mental breakdown, is because we can't plan, we can't prepare, we can't see the time horizon, and our brains are intrinsically wired for an event, for an end event. It's really important to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. So time is really what messes us up, this idea of time. So it's the idea of our past and past events imprinting on our now, and this projecting into the future, this brain wanting to know exactly how things are going to play out and who we're going to be. So past experiences, our brain doesn't want that to happen again, so we're projecting into the future. And so it's this play with time that creates tremendous, tremendous suffering, which is why, Nikki, more and more people are turning towards mindfulness, because mindfulness says, enough with that. Yes, it is the default, because remember, the default mode is looking, it's past thoughts, it's projecting into future. That's what is activated. The mindfulness is now. It is the power of now. Because that future that you're talking about, the planning, the holiday, the just one step further, doing whatever it is that makes us feel safe or gives us the drive to go forward or helps us with our emotional regulation or whatever it is just an illusion. It That's is right. an illusion, because the future does not exist. We have never, ever lived in the future. It is simply something that takes place in our imagination. But it is the brain that tells us if we control that, we're going to be okay. But think about it. We're here now. We are here now, and it is the future that's creating the stress based on the past experience.
On the past.
So mindfulness is what teaches us to be here now. So more, again, I'm going to say it, more now than ever before, it is bringing ourselves into the moment. And it doesn't mean sitting all zen-like and not planning and not being in action. No, 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 no. Plan, do what you do, be in action and be in the moment. Turn towards the difficulty. Turn towards if there's a disappointment, if there's a cancellation. It's okay. Bring yourself back into the preciousness of this moment. This is the only moment that exists. And it's not the La La Land experience. No, because let me make this very clear to those who are listening to the podcast. Your past and your future is La La Land.
Yeah.
The only reality is this now. So get in touch with reality, not the story in your mind. And it all points to what we've been talking about time and time and time again. It's managing the self, managing the mind, knowing that voice, knowing it's just a thought. It's okay. My brain's doing what my brain's doing. There's nothing wrong with me. Come back to the present moment.
Yeah. Okay. So I've got one more tip for you for running. Let's see if this increases your 5K.
I'll take it.
I think you've done an amazing, I mean, if you're only running twice a week and you're doing 5.6 Ks, you are like in a year's time, you're going to be hitting the 21s. I can promise you that.
Because
you're doing it so gently and slowly and mindfully. And that is what running takes. Long distance running. Anyway, this is not a race. The only person you're racing is again, your brain. So I picked up this tip and it really seems to work extremely well, is to only breathe through your nose. So even if it means you have to tape your mouth shut, when you go for a run, breathing only through your nose. And when you find that you're out of breath, you go back and you walk and you start training your body to breathe and run and exert only nasally. What it does is it brings down your active heart rate. So you want your heart rate to be around 140 max when you're running long distance, and breathing through your nose does that. So when you breathe through your mouth, it's like panting, as if you're running away from a predator, and your brain reads this as a stressor. When you're breathing through your nose, you're warming up and humidifying the air that you're breathing, which sends another message to your brain that everything's okay. So it calms down the stress response.
And the pain
response in the body. But the trick is, when you feel completely out of breath, because you're only breathing out of your nose, is to stop and recover and then run again once you've got your breath back. And it doesn't take long. This will take you a week to get right. And you can get, I think they're called breathe right plasters that you can stick on your nose that actually open up your nostrils. So you're getting more air into your nostrils. They're fabulous. It feels like you've got, you know, another valve on the engine when your nose opens up and you can breathe through your nose. It just gives you so much more power. But give that a bash and let me know how that goes, because
I'm going to do it.
Is that it calms my run down and I don't feel like I get my heart rate down. It's more relaxing. There's nothing you running away from, and it stops the parasympathetic nervous system going into overdrive while you're running long distance. So tell me how that feels. And I really think you're going to enjoy that as a trick.
Thank you for that. Listen, you were pivotal, you know, and I've said it in my blog. I wrote it in my blog. You were pivotal when I was really struggling with the running, and you said, treat it like a mindfulness exercise, breathing in the moment, and that changed everything. So I'm going to try this with the breathing, because I do find it interesting, because if I breathe through my nose, it can bring about a panic if I can't breathe. Then I automatically want to breathe through my mouth. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, so you're saying stop. Breathe, calm your breathing down, and then carry on. Don't try and work through the breathing through the nose with the mouth closed. Stop.
Go into the discomfort. Calm down, slow down. Think about what's going on. Breathe through your nose. I'll send you some of those nose bandages and then tell me what you think.
I'm going to do it. I'll let you know. Good. Unbook.
I know you are. I know anything you say you're going to do, you're going to go and give it horns. So this is fabulous. Okay, so thank you again for your time. I love that this has turned into such a masterclass on mindfulness yet again. And there's so many people who really, really need this right now. So these conversations are incredibly valuable. And of course, I'm going to put all your website and your blog links on the information page if anyone wants to do your courses or work with you. And of course, they can find you on Chai FM.
They can indeed. And Nikki, thank you for inviting me. Thank you for giving me the space. And thank you for doing what you do. You know, you've got the podcast, you're helping people, you're reaching out. It's a beautiful thing that the world exists with people who are giving, people who are growing. And that's what it's all about. So thank you.
My pleasure. We've all got to give back.